typical murderers. Some plan their crimes meticulously, while others kill on impulse.
It's Jason Voorhees.
Fred Krueger, Mother. Fred Krueger!
It is time, Michael.
When there is no more room in hell.
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
The dead.
What's your favorite scary movie?
We'll walk the earth.
I'm eternal, child. I am the eater of...
No tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
The boogeyman is real.
Here's Johnny.
The blackest eyes.
Every year.
The devil's eyes.
Don't fall asleep.
It's got a death curse.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Death Curse Radio. I'm your host, Nathan Barker, and joining me tonight is Kenton Mullins.
What's up, guys?
And Ben, a.k.a. Benedict D'Atley.
Hey, well, how's it going, man?
All right, now for tonight's episode. Last week, we took a break from what we are calling We Love the 80s, our little special that we're doing, starting with 1980 and moving forward. And we took a little sidestep from that and wanted to discuss The Terrifier and Art the Clown, which is still super hot all over social media right now. So for tonight's episode, we will get back on the grind and continue on with We Love the 80s, volume number 3, 1982. Now, guys, I got to say for me, not a ton to get excited about for this year either. Now, granted, not a ton in 80, 81, really. I mean, things really didn't really get to popping off until the mid-80s anyway. So I guess what I don't want to bash on any of these films, because one of these that was made in 82 is actually one of my favorite slasher movies, period. So that's the one thing that I guess would be most excited about for 82, which we'll get to in a minute. So just to kick things off, what we did is we basically just mutually agreed upon a top three, not necessarily in any particular order, which one of them is for me, though, and the other guys will probably say the same thing. So we just agreed on three just for sake of conversation, and then we're going to throw in a couple honorable mentions in there, too. So to kick things off with 1982, and to start off with, I'd like to discuss a movie that does not even have a fucking R rating. And this film has a huge following. And for me, I remember as a kid just watching the shit out of this movie. Now, I don't love it to death. I don't know, it's because I've just seen it so much that I'm just kind of like, whatever. And I don't know if that's the case, but I just remember the movie always being on TV and everybody watching it, and it was super, super popular, but not necessarily super, super scary either. And it does have some good things to it, don't get me wrong, but I think it's probably on the list for us more for nostalgia purposes than how great the film was, which I know people will want to argue that all fucking day long, and that's fine. But it is what it is, depending on what your age is in there. So that film with no R rating that made our top three is Poltergeist. Now, Kent, I know that you had mentioned basically the same thing as what I said, is you saw it a shit ton when you were younger. So how does that stack up of being on the list for you?
Well, when I was a youngster, I grew up on like a 2-square-mile farm. And basically everybody that lived on this farm was aunts and uncles and cousins. And I would just like run around and go wherever I wanted and didn't have to worry about being molested because everybody was family. One of the houses next door to me was my aunt, and she was a huge movie buff, and she may have, you know, been one of the influences in me being into movies. But she had a whole room dedicated to VHSs. This is before DVDs. And I would go over there, and I called it the video store because it was like our little country, you know, Blockbuster. And I would go in, and she had wall to wall to wall, just from the floor to the ceiling, VHSs. And I remember bringing home The Poltergeist 200 times. I watched it all the time when I was little. I loved it. I thought it was terrifying. And, you know, I can't say that it really holds up, because, I mean, I guess it holds up in terms of it being an okay movie, but it's not scary as an adult.
No.
There's nothing there scary. And it does have a lot of interesting, you know, a backstory, and if you go into, like, the mythos of the movie and the curse and all that stuff. But as far as the movie itself, great flick when you're a kid, very nostalgic for it for me personally, but not that great of a watch as a 31-year-old man.
No, yeah, for adults, definitely not. And I'm thinking back to my childhood years, too, and I do remember the first couple times and being like, you know, what the hell is this movie? Because some of the scenes do have some power behind them. And when you are young, you're like, holy shit. And then I don't know if it's because we've seen it so many times that it's just kind of like whatever, which there's not any films that scare me as an adult or whatever. But when you think about the eerie, the scare factor that some people might have for these films, I think anybody that is an adult that's never seen it, they're probably going to say the same thing. Like, yeah, there's these few awesome parts, but other than that, it's not really a scary film. But the thing that I think is just amazing with the cult following that this film has, with all the memorabilia and all that good shit, is that it's not R-rated. Almost every other film that we would probably discuss on any episode is obviously going to be R-rated. And that's the great thing, I think, with this film, is you don't necessarily have to have an R-rated movie to have a very powerful movie. So that's something I think we could probably all agree on as far as that goes. But Ben, where did this stack up with you?
Well, I mean, just like you guys, I saw it a ton when I was younger, probably because of it being PG. You know, it was everywhere. I think it was always on TV at Halloween. But
yeah,
you have a little blonde girl sitting in a dark room up against, you know, the static TV. She says, you know, what is they're here. And I think that's really what sticks with everybody. It was just that iconic image. It's maybe not really so much the film. Like you said, there's a special, you know, a cool special parts here and there. Maybe like the chairs, the special effects and all that, the chairs on the ceiling and moving around. You had Toby Hooper and Steven Spielberg. So it was a great team, but it was a little bit, I don't know, big budget Hollywood, like polished. It really wasn't rough like we're used to from Toby, like, you know, Chainsaw Massacre. So it's a slow movie. It is boring, like you said. It's not a good watch to me now as a 30-year-old. It's about a caring family. You start caring about them. It's slow, and then of course, you know, you get your big epic ending, but it just doesn't really hold up over time. It got the remake treatment, like everything, and the remake sucks. So if that really tells you anything, but definitely not scary. And I think it's really just because of some of the scenes in the film that really stick out to us rather than the actual film itself.
Yeah, I don't think that it's withheld over time or upheld over time at all. I mean, definitely, like I said, if it's on now, it's just kind of like whatever. It's not even like worth watching again. I mean, I'm not saying that I'll never watch it again, but it's probably one of those that in bits and pieces that I would watch. Like if I'm just scrolling through and it's like, oh, there's nothing else on, I think I'll go ahead and click on Poltergeist and have it playing in the background. I don't really have any desire to sit and watch it as far as that goes. But I guess one thing that I'll say before we move on to the next one is I think with this particular film that it's probably one that if you were going to introduce a young person to horror films, that this might be one that you start out with, because it does have the downtime in there, and it does have, if you've never seen horror films or anything before, it would just be like a good starter movie maybe. And because the first time watch, it is pretty good. It's just, it doesn't really hold up after that as far as the few good scenes, if that makes sense. So is that something we probably all agree on as far as that goes?
Absolutely. Yeah. And honestly, in my opinion, the story of making the movie and everything and the aftermath afterwards is more interesting than the movie itself when you start going into that stuff. But okay movie when you're young, not great when you're old.
Yeah, I think it's a starter movie, if that makes sense. I don't know if that's absolutely the right descriptor. Yeah, it'd be like a starter horror film for somebody that you don't want to, if they want to watch them, you know, hey, can we watch this, that, or the other? And maybe you're like, maybe compared to like Nightmare on Elm Street or one of the Friday films or something like that, and you're like, why don't we start with this one? And then you see what the reaction is and you kind of go from there. So I guess we'll label that as a starter horror film for the young audience. But I mean, we have to mention it because it is so popular and it was everywhere. And just for that alone, I mean, it has to be on the list, period, regardless of how we like now talking about it almost seems like we don't like it. But in reality, it's just one of those that it was so popular that I think more or less we probably just got kind of tired of it, if that makes sense.
I would agree with that. Yeah. Like I said, I've seen it. I've seen it countless times and I have no desire to watch it now, but I will say Ben was right with the fact that it's still to this day 20 times better than the remake, because that remake was god awful.
Well, yeah, and I'm glad that Ben brought that up because I was gonna say basically the same thing. So maybe that's something that we'll talk about later, is the comparison between that and the remake. If I don't know, see, now with our thoughts of just kind of being tired of it, maybe we won't even do an episode on that, but that could make for some good discussion later about the remake anyway. So we'll put that on the back burner for now. So, all right, moving on down the list, and all these choices came pretty easy. We really didn't have to stab each other or argue about any of these because, like I said, 1982, not really that exciting of a year. That's just our opinions. But moving on, in the number, in the middle spot, we pretty much came to the agreement that should go to Halloween 3. Now, this film gets just absolutely fucking destroyed by a lot of the fans out there because it doesn't have Michael Myers in it. Okay. Yep. We know that Michael's not in the movie. So how about we just watch it objectively and then make an opinion of it. When you turn it on, say, I know that Michael Myers is not going to be in this movie, so let's just watch it for what it is rather than just fucking bashing it because there's no Michael Myers. I don't know how many times on various social media platforms and groups and forums and whatever the fuck, and you always have the clowns out there that are, well, it doesn't have Michael Myers in it, fuck that movie. Well, you know what? I say basically fuck you because you're an idiot and you need to just watch it for what it is, because actually if you go into it with that mind frame, it's a pretty good watch. And yeah, I mean, I always say give Halloween 3 a break. So for 82, it's definitely one of the highlights. There's a lot of cool shit in that movie. And even if you don't really like, I guess, the plot lines, or if that's not really your thing, it's got some good shit in it. And three words for Halloween 3, Tom fucking Atkins. If Tom Atkins is in a film, you pretty much know that it's good. And I can't even think of a film off the top of my head with Tom that is not good. I mean, the guy's just an amazing actor and great with the fans. And he was a staple of the 80s. So if he's in it, and plus Dick Warlock, and you get to see Dick Warlock without the mask on, I mean, it's got some good shit in there. Of course, with the three masks that you commonly see, obviously the Silver Shamrock, there's good stuff in that. And I think people really need to give that a break. So, talking about the Myers stuff and with the new movie coming out here shortly and kind of some of the stuff that we discussed off air, you know, what are your thoughts for H3, Kemp?
H3 is, it's actually one of my favorite Halloween movies. I really love it. I think it's better than everything that came after it, Halloween wise, but I think that they should have not went with a Halloween title. But even so, like you said, I've always been able to watch it objectively and I always enjoyed it. I think it's a good horror flick. It's a fun horror flick, and it kind of made it seem like 1982 was a boring year for Halloween, like the holiday, because everybody apparently then only wore three masks.
Right.
But I mean, aside from that, it's a good flick. I like it. And like you know, I like Tom Atkins, and it's just a fun movie, and I've never understood the hate that it gets. And if you hate it, then you're not a Halloween fan. You're a Michael Myers fan,
right? But you know the talk that I'm referring to.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Just being completely fucking ridiculous about it, and it's like, okay, then obviously you're just a Myers fan, and you just hate this because it has a Halloween title but no Michael Myers. So you're just butthurt over that. Because if anyone can legit sit and watch the movie and then be like, I fucking hate this movie, then I want to know why. Like, I'm just curious as to why you would hate it, because I don't see anything in there that's garbage by any means.
And, you know, a part of me wishes that it had been really successful because they were wanting to branch off and do Halloween as like an anthology. Well, where each movie is not related to the past one. And I can guarantee you that what would have followed in the next couple movies would have been better than what we had got had that been the case. You know, if they had just went with separate stories Halloween-wise, as opposed to the Michael Myers storyline that just went to straight fucking utter shit.
Well, but, yeah. I mean, here's probably what should have happened with that is, and this is something we could probably just cover on its own later, given Halloween 3 a break. But if you want to do that, then okay, just branch off and just leave the Halloween name off of it. And then if the fans crying that they want Michael Myers back, which I get it, and then that way, It is two separate things. You see what I'm saying? You can go back to your Myers storyline, but then you can continue on with Season of the Witch type shit later and have an anthology series or just whatever the fuck you wanted to do with it. So that's what should have happened, but it didn't. And then the fans screamed wanting Michael back, and they got it back. And then we have the oddball with no Michael Myers in it. So, whatever. So it is what it is. So Ben, what puts H3 on our list for you?
Well, I think just like you guys said, it's confusing because of the whole anthology type thing with Michael Myers and all of that. But overall, it's still a great film. I think if they wouldn't have done, you know, Halloween 1 and then gave us a sequel with Michael Myers, if this would have been Halloween 2, we would have, I think, been more, you know, accepting it like, oh, okay, they're going to do a different one. You know, the first one was Michael's story. This is Season of the Witch. And then they could have went with 3 and it totally would have made sense. But I think the fact that they gave us Michael Myers' story with part 1 and 2 and then tried to do it with 3, that just completely fucking lost us. And of course, I think you nailed it when you said, you know, no Michael Myers, no Dr. Loomis, fuck this movie. But definitely without Jamie Lee Curtis, you still got a great lead right there with Tom Atkins. And I think it's really interesting because it's still a lot of the same cast and crew involved in part 3 that did Halloween 1 and 2. Of course, you know, John Carpenter, Deborah Hill, Tommy Lee Wallace, I know, was involved. Dick Warlock, you mentioned. So still, it's a very well-made film. It's still a great watch. I think if there was no Halloween with Michael Myers or you know, Tales from Halloween or Trick or Treat, all those Halloween movies that we always watch, you know, on Halloween night, this would be our go-to. We would watch this film right here. Like, oh, let's watch Season of the Witch. It's going to be, you know, these killer Halloween masks. We would watch this every year in October. But, of course, Michael Myers and this one gets completely lost in it, which is a shame. And I you can't mention Halloween 3 without mentioning the iconic theme song, the Silver Shamrock song, the countdown to Halloween. Right. That's just, I mean, that right there makes the film watchable and fun right there. So I love Halloween 3. You can't watch it expecting Michael Myers. I did the first time. I remember, you know, 10 minutes into the film, like, what is this shit? But when you watch it and you know it's just a seasonal, you know, October time film, killer Halloween mask, it's creepy. It's a great film, and I definitely think that it's overlooked, but definitely deserves, you know, a break, like you said, man.
Yeah, definitely got thrown under the bus, definitely underlooked, if you want to call it that. And I think that a lot of fans, especially ones that are getting older now, like us being in our 30s and maybe some that are even older than that, the younger generation, they probably just don't really kind of really understand what's going on with a lot of that stuff. I haven't really had much talks with late teenagers or people in their early 20s lately to really see what their thoughts were on H3, if they even had any. And one thing that I've noticed, though, probably especially over the last 5-6 years, is it seems like with when the Blu-ray came out a while back, and it seems like it's starting to get some more respect. And I think that's probably coming from maturity levels of the fans, where they're kind of just like, yeah, I'm going to watch it for what it is and not just throw it under the bus. I don't hear as many people throwing it under the bus for not having Michael in it. So I think it might be a maturity thing. I don't know. so anyways, moving on to the unanimous number one decision. I mean, hands down, absolute number one for 1982. One of my favorite slasher films, actually. And everybody knows that we're huge Friday the 13th fans, so this was an absolute fucking no-brainer. Friday the 13th, part 3 in 3D. I mean, how could you have any other choices, really? I mean, Friday, if you're just looking at films in general from this year, this one definitely stands on its own. There's no doubt about that. Obviously, Jason gets the iconic hockey mask that everyone fell in love with in this film. The 3D aspect may or may not work for you. It is what it is as far as that's concerned. But so much good shit with Friday Part 3 that there's no doubt that it's number one, considering the lack of other exciting shit for 82. Now, I'm not saying that 82 didn't have any other good films, but this one to me just literally stands by itself for that year. When I think 1982 and I think horror, I fucking think Friday Part 3. The rest of the shit just kind of falls into place later on. Everybody knows we're Friday fans. Kent, I'll let you go first.
Well, Part 3 and Part 4 are, in my opinion, bare bones. Friday the 13th, just grit. They are the heart and soul of the franchise, as far as I'm concerned. They're you know, trimmed of all fat. It's just that we're at, it's just Jason running around killing campers. And obviously Part 3 is iconic because we get his hockey mask, and we get the work shirt and the work pants. You know, it's an extremely important film in the franchise. And as far as I'm concerned, 3 and 4 are two of the best films in the franchise, just because of how Friday the 13th-ish they are. Because, you know, the further we get in the franchise, the more they kind of start straying from the source material. And when 3 came out, we were still right there in the middle of it. It's just that good old fashioned, you know, pure Friday the 13th. And that's why I like it so much.
Absolutely, it is. I like the way that you described that. And Friday the 13th grit, that's a great descriptor. And I absolutely agree. And I've come to love Part 2 more as I get older, just for what you just said, the Friday grit. And you're right, things did evolve and change later on, and it got away from the good old campfire situation, if you want to call it that, and things just got different, obviously. That one, 3 is one of my favorites for sure, and no doubt. And the 3D thing, it was, I don't want to say it wasn't the first by any means, but it was kind of a little bit ahead of its time, especially in the horror genre. And I like that aspect of it. I've never actually gotten to see it on a big screen with the glasses and everything. I really would like to do that. But even just watching it at home, it's not something where you're like, oh, this is bullshit, and it ruins it for you. It's not a film that you have to watch in 3D to be able to appreciate. But some of the iconic characters that are so important with Friday, and the cast itself, and like I said, getting the hockey mask that just literally changed the horror genre forever. Now everybody knows what that hockey mask is. As even people that aren't Friday fans, they know who Jason Voorhees is, and it's all because of that mask. And not to say that if we would add another Sackhead Jason and then got the mask in four would be, I agree, three and four are kind of like the meat and potatoes when it comes to gritty Friday. So Ben, you're obviously huge Friday fan. You can catch Ben and I over at the Return to Camp Blood podcast, strictly dedicated to Friday the 13th, if you want to hear us talk shit about that. And Ben, obviously, with Friday the 13th Network YouTube channel. So no doubt we're huge Friday fans. So this was probably going to be a no-brainer just because of that. So Ben, I'll let you run from there.
Well, if Tom fucking Atkins described Halloween 3, I would say hockey fucking mask describes Halloween 3 and probably all of 1982. Like you said, the hockey mask, everybody knows Jason, and it all comes back to that hockey mask. Definitely took Friday the 13th just to a whole nother level. You said meat and potatoes, heart and soul of the franchise. I feel like we always come back and compare it to Part 3 to that Jason. Of course, Richard Brooker just kicking ass. Everybody's probably, I would say, in the top five portrayals of Jason. That definitely stands out. But Part 3 gave us just really good characters, some of the best campers, if you will, I guess, in the franchise, and also bikers. It really opened it up. And if you think about it, I mean, the characters in the film were so good, two of them actually carried over to the video game with Shelley and Fox. And Higgins Haven was really just, I mean, it was still out in the woods, but it wasn't at camp. We got to see Jason in a barn and just different, you know, stalking them in a different way, really. We didn't see him do that in part two. So really kind of helped evolve the character of Jason. Obviously, the hockey mask and the whole look, he went from, you know, deformed at the end of part two. Now he's bald. Kent said he got the clothes. This was the look. This is what we always come back to. So part three, hockey mask, 3D, of course. Steve Miner, you know, this was his second time directing. I think he absolutely nailed it. And I always throw it out there, man. But the theme for part three, of course, was iconic, the disco theme. So, yeah, everybody loves part three. I don't think I've ever met anybody that doesn't like it. And I think it's always up there on people's Friday list.
Now that I think about it, yeah, I don't think I've ever talked to anybody that had a dislike for part three. If they did, I'd like to know what it is, because if the 3D aspect, if you didn't like that, then still, like I said earlier, you should be able to watch that movie and overlook that.
I think you can still watch, you know, you put the DVD in right now. Yeah, you see the gimmicks, you know, the kids playing baseball in the street, you know, the bat and obviously the Paul's eye, you know, Paul Kratka, Rick's eye popping out and things. Yes, it was a 3D gimmick, but I feel like you can still watch and enjoy the film. And, you know, you don't have to have glasses on. You don't have to see it in 3D to enjoy it.
Right. And it's funny that you say that Tom fucking Atkins in comparison to Hockey fucking Mask, because literally that's king of 82, because look what happened after that. Look how iconic the mask became later. So that clearly basically shuts shit down for 1982, as far as I'm concerned. You know what I'm saying? Like that right there, as big as that became, it should be a number one aspect all in itself. And yeah, I mean, so much good shit with that. A lot of good characters, like you mentioned, not the traditional Camp Crystal Lake setting, but it all works. It's something a little bit different, but it's not too far away from what we had already seen with the first two films. And then of course, you know, part four is its own beast. But one of the things that I really like about three is because of human Jason and the way that the character is portrayed. And of course that does relate well over into part four, a little bit different portrayal there, but still, because once we get the zombie Jason, essentially the undead Jason, whatever you want to call him, that supernatural Jason, blah blah blah, you can take your choice, that starts a whole new aspect. And the one thing that I will say before we move on here is that I wish Kane Hodder could have portrayed human Jason, and I think that would have really made a difference in some of these films. I love the way that Richard did it, because it's like, oh, this guy still can be knocked down. He still is, might be, I don't want to say clumsy, but he's not 100% established. He's not just this complete unstoppable rebel force. There's still that aspect there where you can knock him down, you know? So I really liked all that. And we got to kind of see, a lot of Jason on the back half of the movie, which I really liked, and there's no shortage of that. And yeah, just overall good shit. So also, if you're a part three fan, get out there on YouTube on Ben's Friday the 13th Network YouTube channel. He is hosting the Friday the 13th part three memoriam documentary in remembrance of Sir Richard Brooker. You can get on there and check that out from our friend, executive producer Sean Richards. And it's a great watch. A lot of good information in there, good interviews with people. And it's been getting a pretty good response from everybody I've talked to. And it's been in some film festivals, and just a really good tribute to Richard. Like I said, anybody who has not seen that, get on over there and check that out. And I can't remember off the top of my head, Ben, what's the exact YouTube link for your channel?
Oh, just youtube.com. And then that'll be /F13 Network, or, you know, you can just go ahead and search out Friday 13th Network. But yeah, definitely check out that part three doc. I think it's well over 50,000 views now. Sean and them did a great job on it. I mean, it's everybody loves Crystal Lake Memories, and this is really kind of an extension, kind of some, you know, behind the scenes pictures we'd never even seen in Crystal Lake Memories. So definitely check it out, guys, if you have not watched part three, the memoriam doc.
Absolutely great tribute, and definitely a good watch. Kent, anything else on Friday three before we move on?
No, I got nothing. We got, unless we started going in depth, you know, I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll just kind of leave it the way that it is. Like I said, future episodes are always possibilities down the road. So to not get too in-depth and throw too much out there just for the sake of the conversation, I guess we'll just go ahead and leave it at that. So that wraps up our basically our consensus top three for 1982. So not that there was no other good movies in 82, but we just mutually agree that that would be our top three. So to close on out with a couple of honorable mentions and a film that I don't think gets nearly enough credit, and that film is Slumber Party Massacre. Now, most of the slasher movies, we see guys in masks and other types of monsters and things of that nature. So what I love about Slumber Party Massacre is it kind of, it's just, it's the start of like a new beast, if that makes any sense. And of course we have the high school girls and there's so much related with that. And of course, like with Halloween, we've got the high school babysitters and, you know, years later. So that became a trend with those types of characters. And of course, sorority girls later on, et cetera, et cetera. So this kind of poured gas on that fire or kind of helped kickstart those types of films. And great FX work for what it was at the time. And of course, it did spawn sequels later, but I just love the original. And the one cool thing that I like about this is that you actually get to see just a regular guy. You're like, who's this fucking creep? I mean, we're so used to seeing masked characters that it's like, oh, we actually have like a normal looking dude that's just, you know, a fucking murderer. And I got to throw Kent under the bus because when we were talking earlier and Kent's like, I've never seen Slumber Party Massacre. And Ben and I are like, are you fucking serious? So we got to throw Kent under the bus and he's going to explain himself why he has never watched one of the awesome 80s slashers films. I'm shocked that he hasn't seen it. So Kent, explain.
It's just, there's 20 million movies out there, man. And it's just, I never got around to it. And this is a theme in my life where there are really well-known movies, not just in horror, but that I just never watched. I've never seen an Indiana Jones movie ever. Not one of them. I had never seen a Star Wars movie up until about 3 years ago.
Okay, well, hang on. I'm guilty of that too. I've never seen Star Wars. If I did, it was maybe the first one or whatever when I was a kid. I might have seen it, but I have no recollection of ever watching a Star Wars movie. It's not my thing. Those kind of movies are not my thing. I really don't have any desire to watch them, and I probably never will. So hang me if you want. That's fine. But
in my opinion, you're not fucking missing anything because I don't get it. But
yeah, I'm not. It's whatever. I'm not losing sleep over it. Like I said, I doubt I'll, if I do watch them, it might be like 30 years from now when maybe I'm just bored. But as of right now, I have no desire to watch any of them for that matter. So I can certainly understand that aspect, but I think this movie is just probably one of the most underrated 80s slashers is this film. And there was a lot out there that kind of, like you said, you know, you just didn't get around to watching it. So I'm sure there's a few out there that I haven't seen yet that I'm probably like, holy shit, I've been missing out this entire time. You know, what's wrong with me? So I just got to say, shame on you for not watching Slumber Party Massacre.
I mean, I'm definitely going to watch it now. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. Well, Ben and I love it, and it could easily be right up there. I'll just go ahead and say this, that the reason why it probably wasn't in the top three is because Kent hasn't seen it. So after he watches it, he's probably going to say that it could have probably been substituted with possibly Poltergeist, just because for the fact that we've seen it so much, we're just kind of like whatever, and thought that Poltergeist needed to be on the list simply because it was so popular and it was PG. It was always on TV and it does have the following. So for us to not put it on the list, we were like, oh, we're going to get hung up, you know, lynched at the town square if we don't fucking put Poltergeist on there, which there's going to be people that are going to bitch about other films, and I get it. But for the sake of the conversation, we got to narrow things down. So for me, I could easily substitute Slumber Party Massacre for, say, Poltergeist at this point in my life. So you definitely need to get on that. And Ben, I know you love it just like I do. And we were talking earlier about the murderer, since Kent hadn't seen it. So yeah, I mean, what is it about Slumber Party Massacre that does it for you? I mean, for me, like I said, I like being able to see just a normal guy, not a masked character or whatever. And it's like, and it's not just a normal dude. It's like Denim Dan. It's fucking perfect for the 80s.
Yeah, I think it was almost a little bit realer. You know, you get to see his face. I don't know really about the denim. You literally see a guy in like tight Levi's and a jean jacket running around with a drill. But something about it worked. And I will say, if we had to make maybe like a top 10 list or so of the best 80s slashers and leave out, you know, of course, Jason and Michael and Freddy, you know, the big names, Slumber Party Massacre would be right up there for me. I think it is one of, like you said, overlooked. I think it's one of the best slasher films. I think it's definitely better than anything that they're putting out today. It's kind of cheesy, but it knows what it's doing. It doesn't take itself too serious, but just enough to where it's still realistic. I mean, the kills are great, but they're not over the top. You know, the pizza guy at the door, his eyeballs are drilled out. It's classic 80s. I know I say that a lot. I don't want to like overuse that term or nothing, but there's so many horror little cliche stereotypical things that are in this film. Oh, the girl leaves her books behind and she has to go back in. And of course, you know, oops, the school's locked behind her. Or, you know, the phone rings and nobody's answering or something like that. There's just so many little things, jump scares, oh, it's a cat, things like that, that just make it just, like I said, classic 80s. So I really love the Slumber Party Massacre. I know this is one of the first films I think I ever rented as on VHS when I was a kid. So it might be a little bit of nostalgia there for me. There's tons of TNA in this film. Like literally, I think 3 minutes into the film, you are in a girl's locker room. So that's definitely something you can look forward to, Kent. There is tons of that in here, and it's just 80s. It's great. Definitely from the hairstyles, the clothing, the way they talk, you know, it's goofy, but it's still a good horror film. I put it up there with, you know, Halloween and Friday and everything. So yeah, definitely check this one out.
You know, listening to you guys from the viewpoint of never having seen it, listening to you guys describe the killer, it sounds to me like it's just the Marlboro Man crashing a slumber party.
It is. It's fucking Denim Dan.
I'm picturing Tom Selleck in full denim, smoking a Camel and cutting bitches.
Right, but it's like real shit. Like you would expect to see. I mean, the jean jackets and that shit that ran the 80s. You know, it's like, yeah. I mean, you hit it right on the nose. That's pretty much what you're gonna see. But it's a step away from, like I said, this masked guy carrying a knife around and stabbing babysitters. You know, it's a step away from seeing Jason in the hockey mask or the sack head and killing campers. It's like this creepy fucking guy that's murdering these fucking teenagers.
The downside to that is if he's running around in full dim, I don't want to watch it because it makes me fearful of returning to my hometown where that's where half the people dress that way. So, right. But Kentucky.
It's just like, hey, this, yeah, exactly. It's like this regular dude and killing people, these kids with non-conventional ways. Like, when's the last time you heard about someone having their eyes drilled out? You know what I mean? Like, who's killing people with a fucking drill? So it steps away. It's, when you watch some of it, though, you're going to be like, where the fuck was that plugged in? I'm surprised, because I know, like, whenever I use a drill at home or any time in my life, how many times does the drill come unplugged, right? So it's like, this guy really has good luck with the power tools.
And he has the longest fucking drill cord in the history of anything, in the history of film. I know there's one part where she's, the girl, not to give it away for Kent, but she's chasing him with a power saw at the end or something, and hers comes unplugged, but his doesn't. So
his doesn't.
Yeah.
So you're gonna watch it and you're gonna be like, yeah, this is fucking bullshit. But yeah, I mean, that's movie magic for you, I guess. But I don't know. I just watch it and you'll see what we mean, just as far as it is a step outside of the box. And I think that's one of the things that does it for me, is especially during that time, like I said, with the mass characters and Ben, like you saying, I don't want to say classic 80s too much, but that's the thing. It was a movie like this is the reason why you're saying classic 80s, is because of a movie like this. And I've noticed a little bit more probably in the last 3 or 4 years, I've been seeing more t-shirts pop up and things of that nature. Whereas before it was like a rarity to see a Slumber Party Massacre shirt and some of the alternative posters. And now I think people are kind of starting to appreciate it a little bit more, and it didn't have blockbuster actors in it or anything like that. It was just actors who were basically believable for what they were trying to portray. Yeah, there's some cheesiness in there here and there. Yeah, but there's cheesiness in pretty much everything from the 80s. Like you saying, classic 80s, that's just stuff that we're accustomed to seeing and that you're used to in slasher films. So yeah, Kent, you need to get on that, and then maybe we'll actually come back and do another episode on that. So then you can, because if you dislike it, then we're gonna have to talk about that.
And this is a good moment to thank our sponsors, DeWalt Power Tools, who have just introduced the new battery power drill.
Well, big shout out to Craftsman. Thanks for sponsoring our show, and Sears. Thank you to Cobalt. Absolutely. Our new sponsors, absolutely. So we might want to reach out to them. Maybe we could make that happen.
For sure.
We can work in power tools to like half the horror movies.
Right, absolutely. So yeah, get on that, and we'll talk about that later. Shame on you for having not watched it, but like I said, I'm right there with you on some of the stuff. So, but that's just a good example of how it's been overlooked too. And that's why I was going to say that earlier. I'm glad I remembered. So you just saying, well, I haven't got around to it, it basically got overlooked, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's I can name off like a dozen horror movies, and I'm a huge horror buff. It's 99% of the stuff that I watch are horror movies, and there's just so many of them that you can't see them all. I've got one buddy, I think, Aaron, that is the only guy I know that's seen it all. You know, I think we all have movies like that, like you said, Nathan. It's just one that slipped through the cracks for me.
Right. No, I get it. But like for me, I love horror, obviously. We wouldn't be fucking sitting here talking, but I don't love all of horror. There's just some things that are just not my thing, and I'm not going to fucking watch them. So they can be great movies and have a huge cult following or whatever, but I don't really care for them. I'm not going to sit and say that they're bad movies. I just don't really care for them. It's just not really my thing for whatever reason. So yeah, you might watch this and might be like, nope, I don't really care for it, but hopefully you like it. And we can discuss that later for a follow-up episode. So moving forward to a final honorable mention, and this is another movie that's not necessarily my thing, but it's also fitting because what I'm talking about is The Thing. So the main reason for me of wanting to give this movie a shout out is simply because of the FX work is absolutely fucking amazing. So thoughts on that, Ben?
Well, the effects. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, John Carpenter, Kurt Russell with the flamethrower. It's great. I know it's crazy. I always kind of compare this film to The Shining because they're out in the snow. It's like isolation, you know, somebody's bad. Just overall, just kind of eerie. I think it's really cool because, you know, we had John Carpenter. He did, you know, the slasher thing with Michael Myers. Then we seen The Fog with that was his ghost story. Now this is his alien story. So John Carpenter, great. Of course, you know, it's a good film. It's well made, but again, just maybe not my thing, but yeah, the effects just, they still hold up today. They're, I don't want to say comical. There's like when the head is shooting out like the little, you know, vine things and everything, but it's still believable. And it really just adds to the charm of the film, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Now, once again, this just goes to show, like, you can love horror, but not necessarily be a fan of all things horror. And this film has a huge following and a great cast, and it's well done and great effects, but just not really something that I'm that interested in. I don't dislike it by any means, but just for the cast and crew and especially the FX, it definitely deserves honorable mention. And for some people, this could easily be a top three or top five film, and I could certainly understand that. Like I said, it is a good movie, but just one of those things that for me, just not a lot of interest there. So Kent, what about The Thing does it for you? I'm going to assume FX work like what we both said.
Well, this is another one of those movies that I recall often running across the lawn from my aunt's house home to watch. I borrowed it from her probably 20 times. I've seen it a lot growing up, and it's, in my opinion, a sight with, you know, the difference is with what Poltergeist didn't hold up, I think The Thing does. And, you know, being a prop and mask artist, the practical effects work in this, like you said, is amazing. And I always appreciate that stuff. I'm very anti-CGI, and there's not any in here, and not because, you know, they didn't have the means to do it then, really. But because it's just not the style of movie that they wanted. They wanted to go all practical effects, and they were wanting to do that with the remake as well, and they ended up not going that path and fucking it up as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, man, it's the practical effects. I think it's a good story. It's creepy as hell. I think it holds up. And on top of all that, for me personally, it's just really nostalgic. I grew up watching it over and over and over, just like Poltergeist. And, you know, I still to this day love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that may be it, too, is I seen it so many times when I was younger. And it wasn't really, I didn't have a ton of interest in it back then. So it might have just kind of got burnt out on it. I don't know. But yeah, it definitely does hold up, like you said, compared to the Poltergeist that I don't think holds up, but this definitely does. This is kind of one of those timeless pieces that you can always watch it. Like I said, I like it. It's just, like I said, not a lot of interest there for me compared to some of the other slasher style movies.
That's, you know,
more, up my alley.
It kind of always felt to me like one of those movies, like Werewolf in, American Werewolf in Paris and American Werewolf in London, where they're trying to showcase their practical effects abilities. It kind of felt like the movie was built around the effects, where like, look at what we can do. That's always kind of what it felt like to me. And the same way with Werewolf, where, you know, the effects were forefront and the movie was an afterthought. But that being said, it still works amazingly. I kind of always felt that way about those two movies.
Oh, yeah, definitely makes sense. And I didn't even really think about it like that until you mentioned the other. But no, I definitely agree with that. And like I said, when the FX work stands out like it does, I mean, it does. It can take away from other parts or things about the movies when you have something that's that great. So, yeah, I can totally see that. All right. So we've got Poltergeist, Halloween 3. Of course, Friday the 13th, Part 3. Definitely the top of the list there. And following that up, honorable mention with Slumber Party Massacre, which we will follow up episode, definitely follow up with an episode of that on its own later when Kenton gets off his ass and actually watches it. And then, of course, The Thing. So, unfortunately, 1982, not a ton to get excited about, but definitely some good stuff in there. So, any final thoughts or things to mention otherwise before we wrap this up?
Basket Case, Swamp Thing.
Well, all right, that wraps up another episode of Death Coast Radio. So please rate and review wherever the hell you listen to the show at, and check us out on Facebook at Death Curse Radio or our website, deathcurseradio.com. Once again, show shirts are available at slasher-tees.com. If you want to represent the show, then definitely send in a picture of you wearing your shirt to the Facebook page at Death Curse Radio, and we will post it on the page and give you a big shout out. Once again, slasher-tees.com, and hit up owner James Amaral for your custom orders. Until next time.
Evil lurks in the mind of a madman.
This is the end, friend.
Your suffering will be legendary, even in hell. From the prime time, bitch.
I am the devil, and I am here to do the devil's work.
Candyman.
Because I've seen enough horror movies to know any weirdo wearing a mask is never friendly.
That is better.
I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare.
Something's a strange idea entertained.